You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
This episode of On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Brand Now, How to Stand Out in a Crowded, Distracted World. Many former On Brand guests are already raving about Brand Now. Jay Baer calls it the quintessential guide to modern branding. Stacey Grissom of BarkBox says Brand Now provides practical tools and a helpful framework for building a brand both online and off. Learn more, get special extras and additional resources at brandnowbook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Dean Noble. Dean is currently the director of marketing at the Santa Barbara Zoo. Dean began his career in the entertainment industry and worked in feature film development and acquisitions for ITC Entertainment in Studio City, California. He spent 10 years with the Universal Studios Recreation Group and was part of the grand opening marketing team for the $2 billion Universal Studios Japan theme park in Osaka. He was part of the PR team, marketing training team, and brand managing licensing relationships for Steven Spielberg, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Marvel Entertainment, Peanuts, and Sesame Street, among others. He has a BA in English from Pepperdine University and an MBA from California Lutheran University, and was privileged to teach the zoo class at Cal State University, Channel Islands. Dean grew up in Honolulu, studied in London and Heidelberg, and has circumnavigated the globe. Be sure to ask Dean about Improvology, the popular comedy science evenings he hosts at the beautiful Santa Barbara Zoo, and the new radio show he co-hosts, Zoological Radio, which is produced in conjunction with KCLU-FM NPR for the Central Coast. We will ask him about all of that this week on the On Brand Podcast. Dean, welcome.
Wow, Nick, thanks so much. I think I have my new ringtone. Can you get me a recording of that?
Of
man,
all of
I sound
that.
Like a million bucks.
I would just love the length of that ringtone. To me, that would be hilarious. That it's great. But there is so much in there. And I love a bio that really kind of sets the stage for the interview itself. Because sometimes when I'm lost, I ask a guest, how did you end up doing XYZ? But I especially have to ask that, given your path and background in the entertainment industry, how does one go from show business to the zoo business?
Well, let me tie it back to a book I just pre-ordered called How to Stand Out in a Crowded Marketplace. Are you familiar with it?
I am. I believe that might be otherwise known as Brand Now.
Your book. You know, it's not until you get to a certain point in your career and you look back. I was a real bookworm. In fact, in sixth grade, I won the bookworm award, you know, in the Haas elections. I'm a real story aficionado, and I wanted to go into the entertainment industry. I'm a failed stand-up comic, but I did have about 10 great years working for a production company, ITC, that made all of those. Do you remember all of those like Women in Jeopardy movies with Valerie Bertinelli and Kate Jackson?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, those were our bread and butter. And then Welcome Home, Roxy Carmichael with Winona Ryder that aired over and over on cable television. So I got some really great first-class professional story training, Nick. But in order to make more of a living, I followed one of my bosses over. He was going to go produce the new T2 3D theme park ride at Universal Studios. And from there, I got the chance of a lifetime to work on this Japanese theme park. So I kind of went from my first love of stories over to something that was a bit more profitable. Yeah. And then I've been really fortunate now that, you know, thanks to the technological revolution, where what my marketing coordinator can do on her Mac laptop in an afternoon would have cost, you know, $50,000 when I started out in my career. My passion now, you know, the dry word is creating content, but my passion is stories. And I think now, you know, in order to stand out in a crowded marketplace, storytelling is one of, if not the best ways to do it.
I think that I couldn't agree more, given that that's the ethos in the aforementioned book. But I think that, honestly, your background, I would dare say, might have you set up even more so for this kind of story revolution that we're seeing in marketing today. Would you agree?
Sure. And let me recommend a book that nobody listening has ever heard of. My dear friend Bill Idelson was my writing teacher. I'm a failed screenwriter. And he started out on The Andy Griffith Show. He worked on Gomer Pyle. He worked on Love American Style. He was one of the producers for that. He was started on The Dick Van Dyke Show, wrote a great Twilight Zone episode. If anybody is listening, it's the one where the grandmother dies and the little boy starts talking to his dead grandmother on the telephone. And she keeps luring him out into the street so that she can join him. Do you know that episode,
That's not one that I remember. But
okay, it's hard to forget. Anyway, so Bill Idelson has written two books. One is called Writing for Dough, and the other is called Bill Idelson's Writing Class. And during his time, he was one of the top four or five sitcom writers in Hollywood. And he also includes some of the first drafts of his script for, like, Get Smart, you know, the really funny version before they got watered down by the network. So he's got some hilarious first drafts of some Get Smart scripts, of some Andy Griffith Show scripts. So Bill Idelson. So if any of your brand builders want to run over to Amazon, I bet you they've only got six in stock. Grab them.
Awesome. Well, those sound like great story resources, and what I love is, you know, your background in comedy as well. And I think sometimes comedy, if story is scary for people, I think sometimes comedy stresses people out even more, because then all of a sudden you have to be, I'm putting air quotes around this, funny. But really, I am told from your bio to ask you about improvology, but I think that so many of the rules of improv that, yes, is often used for comedic effect, those lessons can be very powerful in a business context as well.
Yeah, I want to yes and that, and I want to recommend another book, Impro, I-M-P-R-O, by Keith Johnstone, who is one of the pioneers of improv comedy. But it really goes to you and I, everybody's creative, you know what I'm saying? Once upon a time in our tribal societies, or really not too long ago, everybody sang, everybody danced, everybody did art. But all of a sudden in our industrialized society, it's all of it. You have to be considered good at it or be able to be professional at it. And I don't think that's human nature. I think art is part of who we are. Would you agree?
Absolutely, I would. You know, Dan Rome, who's written several books, including Back of the Napkin and Draw to Win, talks about that we, as children, we do all of this. We make believe, we draw, and then as we grow up, I don't know if it's the art class of I feel bad, I feel like my drawing isn't as good as your drawing, and we get in our heads, and more importantly, we stop creating, which I think is really a shame at a time when I think we could really use it the most.
Absolutely. I think there is an epidemic of depression going on. And I would say two sources would be lack of artistic outlet and then lack of a connection with nature. But let me circle back to my favorite topic, according to my bio. We built this brand new Discovery Pavilion. It was an education center, and we were going to have adult lectures. And we opened up the doors, brought in some of the top biologists and animal experts on the planet, and we were lucky to get 20 or 30 people. So what do? They come to the marketing guy, right? Dean, fix this. And I said, well, listen, you know, for our local weekly paper, the Santa Barbara Independent, the local arts weekly, a junior page is like $600. I said, you know, looking at the number of people we're drawing, it would be easier to just pass out $20 bills to guests at the door rather than take out a full advertising campaign. So Hannah Kistner, who runs her education division, in one of her blogs found out that I think the Edinburgh Zoo was doing a comedy evening with stand-ups, and they were having a competition for the most underappreciated animal and apparently selling out. And somebody had ratted on me that I had performed improv down in L.A. And, back in the early days, Wayne Brady was in the group, Brad Sherwood was in the group, Mike McShane was in the group, you know, a lot of the guys who went on to fame and fortune, and whose line is it anyways. I wasn't at their caliber. It was like playing bench for the Lakers. But still, to take Wayne Brady out to a college gig was always a treat. He just killed. So I put the word out to some friends of mine. You know, I said to Hannah, stand-up is difficult, but I said, we might be able to do something kind of along the lines of improv. And I had this very vague notion where we'd bring in a scientist, they'd do like a two-minute TED Talk, and then the improvisers would turn it into a game or a story or a scene from Shakespeare. And Nick, I didn't know if anybody was going to show up, and it was one of the best evenings of my life. We had 120 people show up. It was a full house. We had like cocktails set up. We turned it into sort of like a lounge, hip lounge setting. We were serving beer and wine, and we had to take the couches out and bring in more folding chairs. And as you know, it's hard to fail in front of a full house. The improvisers I brought up that evening, Brian Lohman, Stephen Kieran, and Joe McGinley, just killed. And so we've been doing it a few times a year ever since. It's called Improvology. We have some videos up. I'm still trying to capture it on video. It's a great live show. And we started touring. We did a gig at UCSB, and then we're doing another gig at UCSB, and then we're going down to the Aquarium of the Pacific in Long Beach. But I leave it to your listeners, you know, what is the power of a live touring show? You know, how does that impact your brand? Is it surprising people? Is it memorable? You know, is it a new product offering from the Santa Barbara Zoo? I'm still trying to figure out exactly what it is.
Well, it's interesting that you talk about the live show, because this has come up a couple times recently. And I think with as digital as we have focused recently, that it has created this space where these live events, where you can, God forbid, actually connect with people, yes, especially in interesting locations, in innovative ways, you have the opportunity to use the word of the hour here, but to stand out. And yet it's for some reason still very untapped.
Yeah, I think there's tremendous future in it. And one of the things I'm bumping into is a lot of people just don't know. It's like you said, comedy's scary. You know, I always say it's family friendly. I always say it's for ages 9 to 99. That's the first thing out of my mouth. But here's an interesting story. I wanted to get more college students in. So I had two kids. I comped them. They're from a friend of mine who's a marketing professor here at SBCC, Santa Barbara Community College. And they came to the show and they loved it. They raved about it. And I don't think they'd ever been to a live comedy show before.
Wow. And to then be the kind of mechanism that brings that to them, I think is pretty powerful positioning for your brand as well.
I think so as well. And the fun thing about it is when we, I will meet people a year or two after a show and they will say, you know, I still remember that California condors are terrific parents, or I will still remember that there's a parasite out there in the ocean that can change the sex of a crab and turn the crab into a zombie nanny, or I still understand that these ants in my kitchen are all originally from the Amazon and range from the border of Mexico up to the border of Oregon, with one exception, you know, with a rival tribe that's down in San Diego that's constantly at war with them. So it's very sticky. But back, circling back to the college students, and you'll get a kick out of this. So I had coffee with them after the show, and they schooled me, Nick. They're like, you need to get some influencers in here. Do you have any influencers? I'm like, no. Whoa. It hadn't even occurred to me. I'm like, do you know any? Yes, we know this amateur surfer. We know this DJ. I'm like, okay, well, let's try to hook up with them. And then our improvisers are all in their 40s and 50s, and they did scenes based on Tennessee Williams and Chekhov. And the college students were like, who is this, you know, Michigan Williams, and what is this Chekhov guy? Is he from Star Trek? So I had to learn that we're going to have to revamp some of our genres. They knew Jane Austen. They knew Shakespeare. They knew Stephen King. But beyond that, I had to sit down with our improvisers and really try to come up with some some storylines. We're trying more when we do a narrative interpretation. Harry Potter is going to be popular. What else did they like? Disney movies or Spielberg, they knew. But a lot of our older playwrights were just completely foreign to them.
Well, I think that's a great way, too, of focusing on getting to know your audience, which I think sometimes when it comes to content creation, when it comes to marketing, mm-hmm. we have an idea that we like and we're eager to hit the ground running with it. And we don't miss some of those course corrections that we can make that can help create a greater connection with the folks that we're trying to connect with.
That's really well put, Nick. Absolutely. And they schooled me. It was kind of tough. I thought I was kind of hip happening and tapped into what's going on, but apparently not.
I'd love to say I have never been caught on that end of things, but I would be lying. I'll just say yes and. So,
oh, good.
So talk to us a bit about, you know, I'm in the book, I kind of lead off with this idea that really when you think about it, anything is a brand. A Fortune 500 company, a small business, nonprofit, education, cities, places like zoos. Talk a bit about what it means, what brand means when it comes to the zoo.
Well, my favorite quote is a paraphrase of Cary Grant, the movie star. He said, a thousand decisions go together to provide one single effect. And he was talking about motion pictures. And for me, that's one of my favorite definitions of a brand. But the big change I see, I'm in my early 50s, happened in 2008. You know, this phenomenal technological revolution has allowed people to create radio shows and movies and graphics that would have cost thousands or tens of thousands of dollars, you know, when I started out my career. So that means everybody has access to the tools to create their own stories and their own representation of themselves. And you're right, you know, I think our brand here at this beautiful Santa Barbara Zoo, when people ask about it, the first thing I tell them is we're considered one of the world's most beautiful zoos. You know, what do we do that nobody else in the world can do? And we're a private nonprofit. We're not a city zoo. And we're set on the site of a former private estate with sweeping views of the Pacific and the San Ynez Mountains. And we probably, even without the animals, could still sell tickets. The gardens are so verdant. And our Steve Jobs, our Walt Disney, is a gentleman by the name of Ted McToldridge, who's a real character. 6'2", round rod straight, thin as a rail, hawk nose, and British. And he essentially created this zoo and is still a bit of a legend in the community. But his insight, Nick, was not to do cage, 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 cage. You're walking through some gardens and then there's some tropical flowers and boom, there's some lions. And you're walking through some oak trees and boom, there's some giraffes. So it's really kind of a microcosm of it's like a commercial for Mother Nature. In other words, so rather than your traditional zoo, Ted McToldridge had the vision to create something that was beautiful and special. We host between 50 and 80 corporate events per year. We do a beer festival up on our hilltop that sells out in 15 minutes. We do a wine festival. If anybody's listening in California, Roar and Pour tickets are still available. Roar and Pour is May 5th, and Zubru tickets go on sale this Saturday, May 1st. So I would say our key point of differentiation is beauty, but I think what really sets us apart is because we are a private nonprofit, a medium-sized zoo, 500,000 attendance, 30 acres, is customer service. We really are trying to be the Southwest Airlines or the Disney of Zoological Park. And I think it's that person-to-person interaction. If we're fully staffed and fully staffed with the right people, Nick, that's the best thing you can do for your brand.
Well, I love what you just said there about being the Southwest Airlines of zoos. And that is, I talk about that. It sounds like you're interviewing me about my book. But
you're a sharp guy, Nick.
But that's something, the recommendation that I make is to do those kind of, we want to be the this of that. And I think it's especially helpful if you have an industry that might seem confined or might seem like it's a very certain kind of thing, and I would say, you know, a zoo could be something like that. So I think that this is a great way of getting at that. And for just a snapshot, a literal snapshot of how different it is, you could look at the headshot of Dean posted on the website, and you talked about you could be wandering around here, and there's a giraffe, and I'll be darned, there is a giraffe right there. So,
yeah, we did something fun, and we did it with about half of our staff here. We set up a desk someplace in a garden environment. Some people were on our giraffe deck. Some people had a cockatoo on their shoulders. Some people had a snake on their desk. So it wasn't just for me, but we wanted everybody to be able to have these fun headshots where there's an old-fashioned typewriter, a mug that says Santa Barbara Zoo, an old-fashioned desk, gardens behind them. And again, because I think if you're fully staffed and fully staffed with the right people, that's the best thing you can do with your brand. And you want them to be proud of their work environment. Culture is so critical, Nick.
Absolutely. And what a fun headshot. And plus a giraffe is personally one of my favorite animals to see at the zoo, because I always, as a tall person, I always felt a special connection to those big gangly creatures. So, but let's talk a little bit about some of the baggage that comes with I don't want to call it the zoo business, but I guess that's what it is. There, in this day and age, when we talk about transparency, when we talk about, you know, seeing some of the, you know, whether it's something like Blackfish about SeaWorld, lots of questions on animal rights and the treatment of animals, how do you address that in your work, communicating the brand?
Yeah, thank you for asking that, Nick. I mean, that's really one of the things that gets me up out of bed every morning. If I could just step back and ask your listeners just to think about where the planet is with 7 billion people, you know, ecologically, are we living in harmony, and are we living in a way that's sustainable, that will allow our children and grandchildren to lead healthy and fulfilling lives? There are many pieces to the environmental puzzle, and I think zoos and aquariums can be an important piece. We have about 300 million people every year that come through the gates of accredited zoos, AZA, Association of Zoos and Aquariums. There are about 2,500 facilities licensed by the USDA, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, to exhibit exotic animals. The top 250, top 10% are part of what's called the AZA. And we get about 300 million clicks at the gate. And I don't know, what's a Super Bowl spot going for these days, Nick, for 30 seconds? Is it 3 million, 5
yeah,
million?
That's somewhere between there, yeah.
I mean, if you could do the math where it's each individual spends about 90 minutes at an accredited zoo or aquarium, and they're 300 million, you know, that's infinitely more than what the Super Bowl brings in. So we have an opportunity through zoos and aquariums to impact real people of every political persuasion, race, creed, and color. The conversation about having animals in captivity is an absolutely good conversation to have. And again, it goes back to the people. Do you have the expertise and the dedication and the resources to look after these animals? And the way I run our marketing department is every animal here at the Santa Barbara Zoo needs to have a story. Why is it here? Our giraffe, Michael, who's in the photo with me, is considered the most valuable breeding male in North America, which I thought up until he arrived was me. thank you.
Good.
And we also exhibit California condors. There were down to 20 of them on the planet in the early 80s, 21. And now we are kind of like a way station for ones that will either be re-released into the wild or go into breeding programs. So every animal needs a story in so far as why is it here for education? Why is it here for? Is it here for breeding to keep the captive population healthy? We have a full-time registrar on staff who tracks the DNA of all the animals. Is it here as part of a global conservation movement? We have Amur leopards. They're the most endangered big cat on the planet, and we are connected with organizations in Siberia and some of the cubs that Sebastian and Ajax, our male and female, may be running around in Siberia someday. So every animal needs to have a story behind it, needs to have a rationale for why it's at this zoo or aquarium, and then you've got to have the right people with the right training and the right resources. In the end, there's a continuum, I think. Not all kindergartens are the same, not all restaurants are the same, and not all zoos and aquariums are the same.
That is so true. And thinking about the stories, I love when you said that every animal has a story to tell too, because it reminds me that, you know, being black and white about some of these things, and that, you know, thinking about the right kind of zoo, the right kind of environment, I think is really key. Now, you talk about telling those stories. You mentioned something earlier about how we have these opportunities now to create, you know, the boring way of saying it would be to create content, but creating vehicles to tell these stories, like your radio show that I know you and I chatted a bit about when we ran into each other at South by Southwest. But talk a bit about your show.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's all started with my CEO, Rich Block. He's for years has been chatting with somebody who owns one of the local AM stations about doing a radio show. And finally, he foisted it on me. And I was not happy about that. I didn't want to do it. Nobody listens to AM radio. And, you know, I smiled and grinned, but I was a real pissy pants about it for about 48 hours. And then it occurred to me, well, could we take some of these interviews of the, we have the most fascinating people in the world that come through the Santa Barbara Zoo from all over the planet. We have park rangers from Virunga National Park in the Congo, or the world's leading expert on P22, the mountain lion that lives in Central Park in the middle of Los Angeles. People have been stung in the mouth by a jellyfish or given mouth to mouth to rhino calves. So I knew we had the stories, but I knew AM radio was not the right place. But I thought, well, if we use the facilities here at the local station, can we podcast them? And I dragged along Dr. Estelle Sandhaus, who's our director of conservation and research. She runs a 5-member team that works exclusively in the field here in Santa Barbara. We're located in a global biodiversity hotspot, so we have a lot of rare and endangered animals and plants found nowhere else. And so Estelle and I did this radio interview show. We tried to keep it upbeat, lively, and fun, and it was pretty popular when we posted it. So I scheduled a meeting with Mary Olson and Duncan Lively, who run our local NPR station, KCLU. And so they started running segments of that. And when we get a quorum, they'll put it out on PRX. But the rationale, Nick, is not so much to promote the zoo. It's really more mission-based marketing. And I want people to rediscover the awe and the mystery and the excitement and the harmony and the refreshment that the world around us provides. But because we're so stuck in cubes, stuck indoors all day, in many ways, I think we are cheated from that birthright. And I think it's to our detriment. I mean, you have kids, Nick. How do you get them out into the natural world, into the beauty of Iowa?
Well, it's work, like you say, because there are so many more barriers to doing that. And I think that... Mm-hmm. I think connecting that with your brand is so key, because I think it's easy to become, oh, we're a zoo, oh, we're an attraction. But I think that when you connect with that higher level need, that is a really powerful message and a very, a more meaningful message than just, hey, go out and see a thing, because it does something, it gives you... something pretty powerful in exchange for that.
Nick, that's very well put. Geez, do I have to pay for this podcast? That's absolutely
We'll give you that one. The first.
Okay.
the first hit is free.
Okay, thanks, dude. But yeah, you're right. I think the fun for me is to take a zoological park and rather than, you know, the challenge is, sure, we want to drive traffic to the gate. We want you to come. We want you to unplug and have a great time with your family. But then beyond that, I want you to learn our stories from our conservation team that are out working with Channel Island foxes and California condors and red-legged frogs and sea otters. I want you to meet our partner organizations that come through to promote cheetah conservation in Kenya or African painted dog conservation in Zimbabwe. And I also want you to come and, you know, to laugh, to have an evening that you can share ages 9 to 99, you know, here at the zoo, where we team up artists with scientists. So it's still a work in progress, but in a way, I'm starting to promote our offerings and our stories almost more than promoting the zoo itself. When I got here, it was come to the zoo, and now it's really more about, you know, please stand in awe of the phenomenal world around you and be refreshed and be rejuvenated.
Well, Dean, I could continue to be rejuvenated by keeping this conversation going, but alas, I have to, we have almost arrived at our time, but before we do, I have to know someone that is steeped in improv and show business and comedy. What is a brand that has made you smile recently?
Really? Well, you know what? I got to hand it off to my mentor, Norman J.T. Elder. He started out working at Disney when there was a Disney, and he his first job was, I think, working on the monorail for Disney World, you know, helping to get that set up. And then he went on to set up the branding and the marketing for Tokyo Disneyland. And then he was my direct report for Universal Studios Japan, our $2 billion theme park in Osaka. He did something really smart, Nick. Rather than taking it was a $2 billion park with the $500 million cash corporate sponsorship program.
Wow.
So rather than take, and this was in 2001, so rather than taking all that cash and buying a lot of ads, he did like a Hallmark Hall of Fame or Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom or Wheaties Presents Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy. He produced a series of television specials for Universal Studios Japan that featured authentic stuntmen in Hollywood. We had appearances from Meryl Streep, Gene Hackman. You know, a lot of these people were promoting movies anyway, so because of the power of Universal, we just, you know, slipped in and got like a little message or got a quick interview with them. So it was really promoting the brand, or as we said in Japan, our tagline was the power of Hollywood, which doesn't mean anything in English, but it was our English tagline in Japanese. So whatever Dentsu Advertising told us to do, we were going to do. So that training and the opportunity to go to Orlando and then New York and then Tokyo to, you know, I was still a young single guy to help promote these specials was the opportunity of a lifetime. And it was a national show in Japan, and we were second only to baseball, which is saying a lot in Japanese TV.
Wow. That is amazing and definitely, definitely smile worthy. Dean, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Please visit our podcast. We have an emphasis on humor. We keep it light and lively. Zoo Radio, ZOORADIO.ORD, Zoological Radio. If you want to find out what it's like to be stung in the mouth by a jellyfish, or if you want to find out how a lonely male cougar living in a park in the middle of LA tries to find a female companion, or if you want to know how to get the stomach contents out of a wild crocodile in Central America using a super soaker, you want to go to zooradio.org.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I need to know about all of that stuff. So,
or your kids do.
Someone does.
Someone does, Nick.
Well, I will be heading there shortly after this. Dean, thank you for joining us on Brand.
And I can't wait to get your new book. Thanks so much, Nick. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dean. And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community. Recently, Gabriel Cohen gave us a shout-out for our episode featuring Justin Wartell. Thanks for listening, Gabriel. And a reminder, if you like something that you heard on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know on Twitter using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. On Brand is a production of Brand Driven Digital, helping complex organizations simplify branding and marketing to unlock growth. More, including the links we discussed on this episode, at branddrivendigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.